Good morning, everybody. This is the Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022 morning session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good morning. Please call the roll.
Morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The city's made several avenues available to the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting's available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public may provide written testimony to the council by emailing our amazing council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, your understanding, your flexibility, your perseverance, and all those other good things as we seek to manage through these challenging circumstances to conduct the city's business. And with that, we'll move into communications. First item. I'm sorry.
Mayor, can I read the...
Oh, yeah. No, I almost forgot the best part of the meeting. How could I forget?
My favorite part.
How could I forget? The legal rules. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
All right. Thank you very much. And I apologize for almost skipping that important part of our meeting. First up is communications item 116, please, Keelan. First individual.
Request of Emily Torres to address council regarding proposed ban on foie gras.
Good morning, Emily.
Hi, good morning. I am a relatively new member of the Portland community. I moved here last summer to start law school at Lewis and Clark. I'm very happy to be living and studying in this city and to be a new member of the community. I'm here today to implore you all to support the ban of foie gras in Portland. Most people have no idea what foie gras is or where it comes from. It literally translates to fatty liver and is made by forest feeding ducks and geese via long metal or plastic tube multiple times a day for several weeks until their livers are literally diseased. They grow to almost 10 times their normal size, which is a completely unnatural and frankly disturbing process that causes pain and discomfort in these birds. Inducing liver disease is directly contrary to the principle of good animal husbandry. And I believe that supporting this industry does not align with the values of this great city. Because foie gras is known as a delicacy, the industry is solely really profit-driven. There is no need to be eating this delicacy, and force feeding ducks to get foie gras is not something we need to do. And it's a violent, inhumane way to treat fellow living creatures. Several cities and countries have already banned foie gras, including my hometown of New York City, because of not only animal cruelty issues, but the environmental impacts of the production of this food and the human health issues associated with feeding people a diseased liver of other animals. So in conclusion, I sincerely hope you guys will look further into this uncomfortable issue and consider supporting the ban to recognize that it does not align with Portland's values. Yeah, thank you so much.
There it is. Thank you. Appreciate it. Keela, next individual, please. Item 117.
Request of Paige Powell to address council regarding legislation to ban foie gras from restaurants. Paige, are you able to unmute? There we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you just email me?
No.
Well, why? Why not? What do I need to do to be seen?
At the bottom of, are you on a phone or your computer?
I am on my computer.
There you go. Now we see you.
Oh, there. Okay. Hi.
We saw you for a sec there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Here, I'm not very adept at Zoom calls. Okay. So when do my 3 minutes start? Right now. Okay. So first of all, hello, commissioners. My name is Paige Powell, a resident of Portland, Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today on behalf of one of our other sentient beings, foie gras ducks. I strongly urge you to support efforts to ban foie gras in Portland restaurants. Foie gras is a luxurious, exclusive, and unspeakably cruel food item. The banning would have little impact on Portland restaurants, and so few places continue to serve foie gras. Thousands of adult male ducks are seized by the neck, forced into a tight body brace, while pipes are rammed down their throats. This procedure happens at least 2 to 3 times a day for weeks. Up to 4 pounds of grain pummeled directly into their tiny livers. Each duck is, as it was mentioned earlier, the liver is diseased, but also is enlarged up to 10 times their natural size before they're slaughtered. They are confined in crowded conditions, suffer enormous pain and agony. Ducks, as well as our other sentient beings, such as Homo sapiens, can experience severe stress, depression, high fear, and pain levels. It's cruel and wrong. Fortunately, visionaries and humanitarians in the state of Oregon and New York City, the two top foodie destinations, have banned foie gras. It's also banned at the Whole Foods in Oregon. Because there isn't any legislation, they have a written policy to not sell foie gras. So I think that the banning of this animal cruelty is now, it's the future. It's enlightened, environmental, and sustainable direction that it's headed. Daniel Hum, owner and chef of 11 Madison Avenue, 2 Michelin star restaurant in New York City, globally considered highly innovative and a leader in the global culinary industry. During early COVID, he gave thought about what he was serving at his restaurant and in a larger sense, what people in general were eating. On NPR's How I Built This podcast, he said, quote, "And the way we have sourced our food, the way we're consuming our food, the way we eat meat, it is not sustainable. And that is not an opinion. This is just a fact." So I know all of you are incredibly busy with other vital city matters, but we need to get you on board to move this ban into a legislative vote. I don't know if everyone's had the chance to view the materials and images and information about the factory process of making foie gras. It is urgent that you know it's your responsibility. I would like to send you actual videos of the making of foie gras to each of you. Please, please look at them. They are very short. Usually they're like 60 seconds before you make your decision. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Paige. Appreciate it very much. Thank you for being here. Next individual, please, Keelan, item number 118.
Request of Danny Rukin to address council regarding banning foie gras.
Good morning, Danny.
All right. Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Loud and clear, and you look great.
All right. Thanks. Let me just make sure that, okay. My name is Danny Rukin, and I'm also a Portland resident. And I also am here to encourage you to please introduce and pass a ban on the sale of foie gras in Portland. Like some of the others have been saying, it's foie gras is considered a delicacy, but it's made from the diseased and enlarged liver of a duck or goose produced by force feeding them with a foot-long tube that's shoved down their esophagus, which is filled with huge amounts of concentrated grain fat and compressed air. They put it into the bird for weeks on end, up to three times a day, until their livers balloon up to almost 10 times its normal size, and then they're slaughtered. It's so cruel, it's barbaric, and it's inhumane, and it's a luxury item that is nothing more than an elitist status symbol of wealth. Animal cruelty has no place in any civilized society, but sadly, it is still legal to sell foie gras here in Portland. And a foie gras ban is a matter of animal cruelty prevention, and it sends a clear message that Portland values protecting animals from abuse. It is banned in the whole state of California, and most recently, New York City overwhelmingly passed a ban in 2019. And I just hope that our city council will listen to your constituents and to your hearts and take action. Please find the time on your agenda to introduce and pass a ban on the sale of foie gras here in Portland. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Danny. Appreciate your being here this morning.
Thanks.
Next individual, please. Keelan, item 119.
Request of Shara Alexander to address council regarding cast iron tree grates creating pedestrian hazards and killing trees.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak today. It's a little chilly today, surprising cold snap, but I think we all remember the heat wave last summer. What we really need is trees. Sorry, I'm in my video here. Here's the first picture. What I'm talking to you today about is the street tree grates that are killing mature street trees on MBA, Grand, and in other parts of the city. So these trees are providing us with shade.
Excuse me, you keep fading in and out. Maybe if you shut off the video, your sound would be better. Sometimes that works.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I hope that works.
It does. It sounds much better.
So, okay, great. Thank you. So the threat to these trees is a slow growing threat. And I've witnessed many of these mature trees killed by these street tree grates on MLK. These eventually girdle the tree at the base as the tree grows over them when they're not maintained, which is really quite common. And that cuts off the water to the leaves of the trees and then the food to the roots. We really need these trees. They are the air conditioning and air purifiers for our entire city, especially for people who are living outside, for people who don't have access to air conditioning and air purifying. These kinds of trees are exactly what we need. So the other problem with these is that eventually they buckle up and trip pedestrians. And this, could I have the next slide, please? It can start out very subtly, like this little lift right here. The tree is growing over the grate, and by the time it grows further, you can't actually remove the grate. You have to grind it out. So this is really not very noticeable to a lot of people. Eventually, these get quite large and lift up and do kill trees. Could I have the next slide, please? Next slide. This is a tree right here on MLK that was killed by a grate. And the last slide, please. That's how high up they can lift. This one's on Sandy. And they are a real mess. So what I'm asking, the scope is about 150 trees on MLK and Grand alone. I've seen them downtown starting to girdle trees, which would be a real disaster. They're also on Sandy and in the Moda Center, maybe in other places. My ask is that you provide me with a contact in the Bureau so that I can start to call these trees in as hazards and have some assistance in removing them, because they're 300 pounds and they require special equipment to remove. And I haven't been able to find someone that will take some responsibility. It's probably in PBOT, not sure. And secondly, that maybe the review could be done of the code and perhaps an amendment if necessary to disallow these grates that are really not as beneficial as they are hazardous. Thank you so much for your time. I really look forward to being a part of the solution here.
Thank you for that presentation. This is a new one and an interesting one, and it's an important one. Thank you for bringing it up. And I know Commissioner Hardesty has a comment as well. Commissioner?
No, I just want to say I'm always grateful when the public teaches me something and I learn something new today. And I have absolutely no idea, Sherry, who to have you talk to. But I can tell you, if you leave your contact with the clerk you signed in with, Commissioner Rubio and I will get together and figure this out. Because when you started talking, I was thinking, man, that looks like, you know, Prox needs to be watering those trees. And then when you started talking about the grates, I thought, whoa, that is an interesting conversation. But I also see Commissioner Rubio's hand is up. You have given us a challenge today, and we are up to the task. We will figure this out.
Commissioner Rubio.
I just wanted to thank Shara for that presentation. This is a new challenge to me to think about. I certainly will check in with our urban forestry staff and see where this in fact finding will lead. But yes, as Commissioner Hardesty said, if you can leave your contact information, we'll be sure to be in touch.
Shara, you had another comment?
Just a brief comment. 5 years ago when I started trying to work on this, since then I've dropped the ball a little bit, but I was able through a series of emails and a series of I went to the urban forestry. They said it was not in there because it's a sidewalk issue, a maintenance issue. I was able to get through to PBOT night maintenance, and they did remove a few of them. But then when I returned to try to pick this back up again, they said that's not really there. It's something that nobody is really yet willing to take responsibility for. But Friends of Trees, Urban Forestry, all of these people who are tree advocates do not approve of these grades. So I'm hoping we can really take this by the horns and get this out of the way. So yeah, thank you very much.
Let me chime in and then I'll go back to Commissioner Hardesty again. But with our form of government, this is not a unique problem where something happens and nobody's really sure who's responsible for it. But the issue you're raising crosses many potential paths here with PBOT, obviously, with urban forestry, possibly. I could even see a role for the Bureau of Environmental Services potentially in this. And obviously, there's some ADA issues here based on the photographs that you've shown us. So this is a meaty issue, and it's an interesting one, and we will sort it out. And we thank you for bringing it to our attention, and I'll let Commissioners Hardesty and Rubio take the lead, but I think this is one we can solve, and we appreciate it. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I just wanted to say to Shara that Derek Bradley is my policy director. And he'll be reaching out to you after we get your contact information, and we will figure this out. We like to solve puzzles in my office, and you have given us an excellent challenge. And what I know about PBOT is we are in the problem solving business. And so we look forward to working with you to figure this out. 5 years is a long time to be advocating for a very common sense solution. So I look forward to you coming back to council to say, we got a solution. Thank you for being here this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Good presentation. Next individual, please, Keelan. Item number 120.
Request of AJ Cellini to address council regarding immigration issues. They have not arrived yet.
All right, very good. With that, we'll go to the consent agenda. Have any items been pulled?
We've had a request for item 124.
Items 124. Otherwise, please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We'll go to the first time certain item, please. Item number 121.
Accept community healing through art report from the City Arts Program.
Colleagues, today we're hearing, colleagues, today we're hearing a report on the city's community healing through art initiative. I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Rubio to introduce the item and our presenters. Good morning.
Thank you, Mayor. In last year's spring bump, we allocated $200,000 to support community events to activate spaces across the city, including $100,000 for an arts-focused community healing initiative designed and implemented by Subhashini Ganesan Forbes, our former creative laureate, and Jeff Hawthorne, the city's arts program manager. It's an understatement to say it's been a pretty significant 2 years for Portland, and it includes COVID-19, wildfires and climate disasters, an unprecedented housing emergency, and long overdue demands for racial justice. And these are just a few of the issues. And today we're going to learn about how art and artists have been playing an important role during these times, helping Portlanders reflect on the world around us, process our emotions, and begin to heal. I would like to introduce Suba Ganesan Forbes, former Portland Creative Laureate, and Jeff Hawthorne, City Arts Manager, to present this report to Council.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. My name is Jeff Hawthorne, and I'm the City's Arts Program Manager. And it really is my honor to work with all of you and our city bureaus, partners like the Regional Arts and Culture Council and other nonprofit organizations to support culture, creativity, and the arts right here in Portland. As Commissioner Rubio noted, City Council invested $100,000 in this art-focused community healing initiative last year. And today, Suba and I are honored to circle back around to you with this report on how the funds were deployed and what some of the impacts have been. So we really appreciate you taking the time to hear from us this morning. First, I am pleased to report that we were able to raise an additional $100,000 from other sources. And there's our first slide, thank you. The Office of Community and Civic Life partnered with us to fund some special projects with a community safety component. And we were honored to receive grants from the Oregon Community Foundation and the James F. and Marion L. Miller Foundation to support this work. We also had about $23,000 in PDX CARES money left over last fall that we were able to repurpose for this program, bringing us to a total budget of a few dollars shy of $240,000. Next slide, please. In all, we worked with 33 nonprofit organizations and 16 individual artists to produce a series of performances, exhibitions, workshops, and other arts events that directly benefited an estimated 5,000 Portlanders. And now I'd like to turn it over to Suba to describe some of the activities that she curated and coordinated. Suba.
Thank you, Jeff. And thank you, everybody, for giving us the opportunity to speak today. I'll be speaking for a little so we can take me off the slides, if that's okay. I want to start by thanking some of the folks who are not in this room right now, who are really responsible, one of whom is Sam Diaz and Cynthia Castro in Commissioner Rubio's office. Both of them were really vital in providing initial support and excitement for this project. And I also want to thank Mona Schwartz, who is in Commissioner Rubio's office, but has moved on to a different portfolio. All three of them, together with Jeff and all of you, really supported building this project. So thank you. And in particular, thank you to Jeff, because I feel like we became like siblings during this project. And I hope we get to do more together. So the Supporting Community Healing Through Art initiative tapped deep into the rich communities of our city. Countless hours of conversations, strategizing, and dreaming resulted in the projects you see in front of you in the report. This initiative provided the possibility for artists, arts collaboratives, and community partners to build activations and events that began to provide avenues for their community members to start expressing their sense of living through these times. This work is ongoing, and the role of arts in shepherding this program really needs to be emphasized. The power of arts and culture is that they can cut through barriers and get straight to the heart of things, if you will. The arts build relationships, oftentimes between unlikely parties, and encourages a type of empathy that is profound and so needed in these current times that are still tender and fragile for so many in our city and globally. On a very personal note, I am honored to have had the opportunity to work with such incredible artists and visionaries, organizers, leaders, and loving souls during this initiative. I'm grateful to have seen so many of these projects through so many different stages, from proposal to culmination. I really wish I could read out all the initiatives, but if that happens, we'll be here for a long time, and I assure you, we'll be drowning in a puddle of tears, both of joy and love. So to help you encounter some of these stories from the field directly, we've brought some of our community leaders into the space. So I will lead you through a series of thoughts and videos to give you a view into some of the activations of the Supporting Community Healing Through Art initiative. And now if we could go to the slide that says Soul Restoration, please. First off, we have Daryl Grant, who created the Soul Restoration Project, using art to transform and embody spaces. The intention was to activate cultural activity in a space that is underutilized in the Black community and bring an artistic lens to the process of healing and transformation. Daryl.
Thanks, Suba, and thank you all for having me. So I know most of you may know who I am. I'm a jazz pianist and composer and educator. And as of this year, I'm celebrating 25 years in this community. So as Suba said, last summer, I started this project called Soul Restoration amidst the conversations about how we bring the city back from months of racial unrest and COVID. And as is evident in the title, the project is grounded in the idea of healing. I saw it as a laboratory to explore how art can activate and renew our civic space. It was supported by RAC, Prosper Portland, and then surprisingly to me, by a City Grief and Healing Grant. So I and fellow artists came together in this project to weave our practices of music and movement, visual art, and spoken word into rituals of healing, first on the North Park blocks in June, and then in Tillicum Plaza in August. It was transformative, it was painful at times, it was a powerful experience. And what I learned is that when you invite life into a space, it shows up in all its complexity. In September 2021, I moved a grand piano into an empty storefront at 14 Northeast Killingsworth, formerly the site of the Albina Arts Center, a building with deep cultural significance for the Black community. I launched a pop-up arts and culture residency I called the Soul Restoration Project Albina Arts Salon. So I imagined the salon as a place that could be both refuge and beacon for Black culture, as a place for ideas and conversation, a place where art could shape community. And in the months that followed, I was joined by many of the committed Black artists whose work you well know, and several others that you may not. We worked to create a space that felt like home. We hosted film screenings, spoken word nights, we created an art gallery, held artisan markets, jazz concerts, school workshops, oral history interviews, community meetings. What was intended to be a 6-week residency extended to over 4 months. Engagement with the space was intergenerational. We had elders and youth together and attracted individuals and families hungry for BIPOC-centered programming from Hillsborough, Gresham, and even as far away as Eugene. And so we did it, actually. With community support, with funding support from OCF, Vanport Mosaic, and others, we revived the space. And as a direct result of the Soul Restoration Project activation, that building has now become home for the Youth Empowerment and Development Initiative, I Am More, which has secured a 2-year lease on the space, continuing its trajectory as a cultural hub. So for me, I have my answer. Yes, art can transform a space and bring life back to a city. It was, and this is just the start, I think. The $2,500 city grant that I got wasn't a lot of money, but it served a vital purpose. It amplified my initial vision. It shifted my thinking of this from a one-time summer project to imagining something bigger, something ongoing, and something with a clear purpose. And it got me moving from thinking about art to thinking about infrastructure. So I would encourage you, as you look around and see all that remains to be done to bring our city back, to invest in your poets, your dancers, your painters, your sculptors, filmmakers, musicians, and artists to harness their dreams and their leadership, because agency, powerful agency, lies in this process. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for that eloquent presentation, Del Grant. I'm always amazed at how long you've actually lived here in Portland. Mayor, I want my our colleagues to know this is the space that will be the home of the Black Youth Leadership Program that we have on our agenda this afternoon. So what came out of a mere $2,500 grant and a vision that Del Grant and many, many community artists and creatives created will live on because of this ongoing support for the youth leadership program. So Mayor, I did not want you to miss this picture because you're gonna be seeing a lot of this space. And I just really wanna appreciate the thought that went into creating this space. And we'll get a chance to talk about it more this afternoon, but the picture says it all. And I just wanted to make sure that we took a moment to really appreciate that. And to really appreciate Del Grant, you came into the city and you just sprung boots right away. And I love that about you because there are just so many things that you do that people just don't know. Yeah, you're a great musician, but you are so, so, so much more than that. And you are a healer. You are a community healer. And wherever you go, you make the community better. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And as you know, one of my favorite words is leverage. Anytime we can leverage one effort off of another effort and really make a big difference, that's what I love to see. And Mr. Grant, as always, I'm so appreciative, and we're all so appreciative of your contributions to the community. I agree with everything Commissioner Hardesty just said. You're a talented man, but more than that, you're a really good man, and we're glad you're here. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Does that complete the presentation, Commissioner Rubio?
No.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'll disappear for a while.
Okay. I'm a puddle of tears already, so thank you for that. well, we have a few more, so bear with us. We're moving on to a video from the 10 Tiny Community Healing Dances. On September 12th, 2021, artists took turns performing on the 10 Tiny Dance Stage, which is a 4x4 foot stage. And their performance evoking a response to recorded narratives from residents of Portland Lent's neighborhood. Original choreography was presented by Anis Mujani, Oregon Poet Laureate, Makino Hayashi, Sophia Tweed Ahmad, Viva LaFree, Sean Keelock, Malik Delgado, Sweta Ravishankar, Jamie Minkus, Adrian Lobo, and Crystal Sasaki. Today you will view an excerpt from Adrian Lobo's performance. Video, please.
constraints of the tiny stage was definitely a challenge, but I found that it aligned really greatly with the narratives we heard from people from the Lens community. And my dance piece is pretty much a montage of multiple stories, one of them being the theme of just being hit thing after thing in this last year, from the pandemic to the riots and the protests to the wildfires and climate change. And I wanted to, you know, mime out the story of what it's like to feel overwhelmed and stressed out. And this tiny stage represented to me like the small houses that people here live in, or maybe the tent, maybe there's someone in the tent. And it's that feeling of the walls like coming in, just closing in on someone, and the dance as a way to pray through it and just break those walls of feeling trapped, and reminding people that to come back to prayer and the dance and the expression, the arts is what I think can really help us through these times.
Next, we have presenters from the Independent Publishing Resource Center. They presented Poetry as Prompt, a joint collaborative poem garland. Intizar Abioto, Stephanie Adams Santos, Jay Dodd, Katie Hanning, and Coleman Stevenson contributed first lines of poems reflecting on the grief and healing of the past year. And community members were invited to add to the poems. Emmy and Harper from IPRC, the Independent Publishing Resource Center, are here to tell us more about Poetry as Prompt.
Hi, I'm Harper. At the Independent Publishing Resource Center, we turn to writing and creative expression, printmaking, publishing, as a place for processing grief and to connect with others. So for our community healing project, we wanted to create a workbook of journal prompts and a multimedia interactive installation. For the workbook, as Suba mentioned, we asked five poets in our community, Intizar Abioto, Stephanie Adams Santos, Jay Dodd, Katie Hannigan, and Coleman Stevenson, to contribute two lines of poetry, two creative writing and reflection prompts. Using those prompts, we created a journal and workbook that was made available to the community to continue processing and healing. We printed over 100 of the journals. You can see them here. The covers were Rizzo printed and they were spiral bound at the IPRC. And we're continuing to make them as well. And we've also made the publication available digitally to community members and at Poetry Practice Space, a free monthly community event that meets virtually right now.
Hi everyone, I'm Emmy. We also turned the lines of poetry into large scale screen printed broadsides that you'll see in the background of the photo on the left there. They acted as creative prompts or catalysts for writing at the IPRC to activate our library space, which is where all of this was installed. Crystal Thomas, a local artist and teacher, designed and created a sculptural structure inspired by memorial wreaths. Participants were invited to contribute their own writing by adding lines of poetry on slips of paper and adding them to the garlands, which are those blue cone slips there in the picture. This project was sparked from a collaborative poetry project that we'd initially started in March 2020. At that time, we used Instagram stories as a platform for collaborating and collecting lines of poetry that reflected and processed the complex world we found ourselves in. We decided that we wanted to take that original idea and make it physical in the form of the booklet and through the public engagement of the installation at the IPRC. Thank you all for having us.
Thank you, Emmy and Harper. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Suba.
We move on to Soup and Tea, supporting community healing through art in houseless communities. Rithi Cruz, Sia Hanna, and Andrea Celeste Macias are herbalists, thoughtful community placemakers, and facilitators of conversations. From November through January, so November 2021 through January 2022, they provided food, hot tea, opportunities for conversation, art kits, healing salves, and plants at C3PO and Hygiene for All. They're here to tell us more about their project.
Hi, I'm Sia. So we came together with just a simple to the villages and the hygiene hub, where we shared the intimacy of conversation, sharing meals, of being graciously invited into people's homes. And I brewed the tea, and tea is a sign of care. So we called on common and accessible plants. And with this simple act, we were able to connect human to human, to our bodies and to earth. And we tend to just assign a lot of complications to the so-called housing crisis, but our innate interconnectedness and how the denial of connection causes people to fall through the cracks is actually profoundly simple. In my work with people experiencing houselessness, I can attest to the importance of community and to the wound that festers without it, even within four walls. So connection was the purpose of soup and tea, and we were able to share nourishing moments with villagers who brought their own excitement and their own valuable experience.
I am Celeste. I'd like to share a little bit about the soup I prepare, or myself and others help to prepare. Soup, like many foods, has the ability to connect people to themselves, the land, and each other. For me, this project was more than preparing nourishing, comforting soup that brought people together. It was about the beautiful web of community care felt in every thread of the collective effort. It was also about coming together with our unhoused neighbors to connect over stories and memories, as well as the music, art, and shared memories, or shared moments of Oz. The gift of community nourishment was reciprocal, and a deep gratitude to the villages and Hygiene for All for welcoming us to share soup and tea, and for the opportunity to witness caring, camaraderie, and community around us. Thank you.
The creative seed for this project emerged from villagers themselves years ago through our shared work at the Village Coalition. When participation waned, we decided to go beyond meetings and visit villages like Hazelnut Grove and Dignity to actually spend time together. Something fundamentally shifted. I felt more at home in these villages and with these villagers. I began to move beyond the issue that brought us together. We are hardwired to connect, and plants can help us remember this simple and profound truth. I've lived and worked in community for over a decade, but the villagers enliven community more fully than anyone else I know. And yes, sometimes healing really is as simple as sharing soup, tea, stories, and dreams.
Thank you, Ruthie, Andrea, and Sia. So the final presentation is a video, short video, and it's from See Me, I'm Here.
Excuse me, excuse me for just a sec. I just cannot let this last presentation go without just saying
thank you.
That's okay. I know you're trying to get through, and we do have a limited period of time, but I just want to stop and acknowledge what an incredible program. And you are young people who are seeing the world from a place that most people my age don't get to experience. And you're doing it with love and kindness. And who doesn't want soup on a cold day, right? I just wanted to say thank you. The C3PO villages were the very first new beds during the height of COVID. The mayor and I partnered because we just abandoned people on our streets. It's what we did when COVID happened. And so I just want you to know C3PO camps are near and dear to my heart. The Hygiene Village started by community, near and dear to my heart. And each of you
near and dear to my heart. What incredible work. Thank you. We need 100,000 more of you. I've been crying all morning. You guys have me crying all morning. Just thank you, thank you, thank you. I had to stop. I know there's something else is going to make me cry too, but thank you for what you did. What a little bit of money can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So the final presentation is a video, and it's from See Me, I'm Here, a creative activation of youth voices of color. It was designed to empower young people who collaborated and co-led this one day, I'm sorry, street party.
It's just going to be that day. It's just going to be that day, right? It is okay. I've accepted. I'm just going to be crying all day. That's just the way it is.
This street party took place on July 31st, 2021, in front of the Portland Art Museum. Creative experiences included poetry, journaling, printmaking, podcast and DJ workshops, open mic, DJing, and free ice cream. I found out free ice cream is very important for young people from collaborators, and that included the Portland Art Museum, again, the Independent Publishing Resource Center, I Am More with Dr. S. Renee Mitchell, The Numbers FM, Naya Many Nations Academy, Belize, whose photo you see here, who was the 2019 Poetry Out Loud Oregon champion, and the Bodecker Foundation, and lastly, A Beat Happening. So this video from Belize will have the last word on my section of this report. After the video, Jeff Hawthorne will help conclude our thoughts today. Thank you so much once again for supporting this initiative. And I truly hope that thoughtful art activations such as these continue to be supported by our city for decades to come. These are needed. And like I said at the beginning, they really do cut through our heart in profound and beautiful ways. Video, please.
Black clouds. Mama, why are clouds white? Because they're not black. Why aren't they black? Because light moves through clouds, dispersed by water droplets to create whites and colors unseen, shown through as a beam from the sun, a combination of all colors that gives us that sun-kissed glow. Then Mama, why did God make it that way? Why did he make light through the color of white? Does that mean I am not light? That the sun cannot pass through my body as bright? I want to be white, Mama. Why am I black, Mama? There is beauty in darkness that cannot be seen until you look past society's version of what it means to be. We are daughters and sons of the sun, the shaking grounds of ancestral truth. The ray white reflects to make light the origin to the story only told in the night. So then, what are we, Mama, if we are rays not in truth? Who are we, Mama, if we are the daughters and sons of the sun? Human, baby, human.
So, Jeff Hawthorne again. I'd like to thank Suba and all of our artists, those who participated today and those who were involved in dozens of other projects that had extraordinary impact that you can read about in your report. I'd also like to acknowledge Stephanie Yao Long in OMF Communications for being our amazing videographer throughout this project, including some extraordinary editing work that she did for those 10 tiny dances that you saw. Thank you, Stephanie. Can we see our next slide, please? A couple concluding thoughts from me. Wanted to mention that our program prioritized marginalized Portlanders. And in this slide, you can see that 88% of our grantees kindly filled out a demographic survey to help us measure whether these funds were reaching their intended communities. And as you can see here, 27% of our grant recipients identified as Black, 23% identified as Asian and 22% identified as multiracial or other races and ethnicities. You can also see that 41% of our grant recipients identified as a member of the LGBTQ community, 36% reported having a disability, and 27% identify as an immigrant or refugee. Next slide, please. And while this program is pretty much completed, there are several more events that we had to postpone into this year because of concerns with the lingering pandemic. And we will be sure to let you all and the community know when these 8 events get scheduled so that you can hopefully participate. And now, with our focus on the City Arts program, we are on the next slide. We are turning our focus to deploying the $2 million in American Rescue Plan funds for relief and recovery for artists of color. And I'm also super excited to report on our next slide that our long-awaited cultural planning process will kick off next summer. This is a comprehensive community engagement exercise to assess the state of arts and culture in every part of the city of Portland and throughout our region. And I remain hopeful that this body of work will lead us to a new vision for arts and culture, maybe even a new definition of arts and culture in the city of Portland, with clear goals and strategies for achieving this new vision. So thank you all once again for your time this morning. Thank you to my partner, Suba. That concludes our report, and I'm sure that we're happy to answer any questions. Thank you all so very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any particular questions at this time? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have any questions, but Suba, Jeff, I just want both of you to know how much we all needed this today. It's been a very long week in the city of Portland. I know I'll speak for myself. I needed this. I needed to see that we're healing pieces of our community. And so I just want to say the timing could not have been better. The work is absolutely phenomenal. And I do want to know how the dancers stayed in that box all that time with all that emotion. I just want to say I needed this today. I really, really needed this. And once again, Asumba and Jeff, you came through. And the artists in our community today cannot afford to live in the city of Portland. And if we're not intentional, we will be a city where we will lose all this creativity because we've just priced out people who create art. People don't create art for money. They create art because they have to. And so I just want to say, what a reminder for us. What made Portland great was the creatives. It's what made people want to be here. And I just feel sad in this moment after such a joyful morning to know that today, if you're an artist, you cannot afford to live in this city. If you're a musician, you cannot afford to live in the city of Portland. So where will our art, where will our culture, where will our entertainment come from? Again, I'm going down a doom and gloom path. I just wanna say thank you. I needed to feel this morning because I've been trying not to feel all week. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Rubio, then Commissioner Ryan.
I just want to also thank Suba and Jeff and all of the other artists for this really profound report. I too am just overwhelmed with emotion and gratitude as my colleague, Commissioner Hardesty has just expressed. It's true. This is what we need right now. And as the city's arts commissioner, as a member of this council, it just makes me really proud of the city's investment in this project. We need more of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful to see how you've prioritized the community's most vulnerable and underserved in the project, as well as Black, Indigenous, and people of color artist communities first.
That's important. And it's holding true to our values that we say that we have. We all grieve and mourn and heal and move forward in very different ways. And it's important that we reflect that and create spaces for that as a city so that people can participate in this healing. So thank you to everyone that came today. Very, very important.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to start off by actually acknowledging you, Commissioner Rubio, for your continued stewardship of the city's arts as the Commissioner of the Arts. Jeff Hawthorne, Sunbae, that was just an incredible presentation. And yeah, we all need this. It's been quite a traumatic. It's been traumatic the last 5 days, especially. And, you know, there's only one bumper sticker I'd have on my car, and that would be Art Saves Lives. And so today was a reminder of that. So, and Daryl, seeing you, I think we arrived at Portland State at the same time. So thanks for helping me recall when I first moved back to Portland over 25 years ago. And to think about the $2,500 that went towards your efforts. And as mentioned earlier, just the impact of that investment, the return on investment, and all that's been flourishing since that is just a reminder of how these seeds really do create so much good. And I will just call out also the good people that were doing tea and soup and connection and storytelling with the people in the villages. You're so right. It is that denial of connection. And it's that isolation that's really epidemic. And your simple act of kindness and love is exactly what's needed at this time. So all of your stories today touched my heart. And thank you for playing such a healing role at this time where the city's in so much pain. And of course, the geographic diversity was really noticed, that this was all over the city. I really was acknowledging that. And also a big thank you to the private foundations, OCF and Miller Foundation, who stepped up. Government can't do this alone. We're going to continue to need to lead into our philanthropic sector as we move forward. Anyway, this is an amazing initiative. I'm so delighted that we get to accept this report this morning. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Keelan, do we have any individuals signed up for public testimony on this report?
No, Mayor.
Very good. I'd entertain a motion.
So moved, Mayor.
Commissioner Hardesty moves. Commissioner Rubio seconds. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio?
I want to thank you again, Suba, Jeff, and also Stephanie, and all the amazing artists who are part of this important project. Your work is deeply felt in our lives today. Thank you. I vote aye.
Ryan?
Yeah, I just made my remarks earlier. I vote aye.
Hardesty?
Thank you, Subra. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everyone who spoke today, and even those who didn't make it today. I am so grateful for your work. I vote aye.
Max?
I want to thank Mr. Rubio and the mayor for championing this initiative. I also want to thank all of our invited guests for their powerful presentations today. And I'd like to thank all the artists who participated in this important program. I vote aye.
Wheeler?
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio, again, for your great work on this. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Suba. And thank you to everybody who participated today. I want to thank the nonprofits and the artists who are participating not only today, but also participating and helping to bring this initiative together and making it the success that it has been. I'm grateful to each of you for bringing the community closer over the past year. This pandemic and all of the resulting turmoil and the economics have taught us anything, it's that we are vulnerable as a society to be pulled apart during times of great stress like this. And I agree with something that Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Ryan said about the arts has just this incredible ability to pull people together. It creates a common ground. And it sort of pushes the political BS and the divisions and all that stuff to the side and allows people to really focus on the commonalities of humanity. And everybody knows we need more of that. We need a lot more of that right now. And this is a really great program to help find that commonality in our community, because despite the last 2 years, I think we still have a lot more in common than we have different. Portlanders have obviously endured extraordinary hardships, and we also know that Portland's artistic and creative communities of color have been disproportionately impacted during this pandemic. As Commissioner Hardesty said, we are at risk. If we're not thoughtful and intentional about it, we are at risk of losing those artists in our community. The Community Healing Through Art project was designed to leverage the power of arts and culture to support grieving and healing throughout Portland's diverse communities, and it's very clear that it's working, that it's having exactly the positive impact that was intended. I also just want to say this, colleagues, I'm really proud to sit on a council that recognizes the tremendous and diverse power of art in our society. We don't get the opportunities as much as we'd like during times of multiple simultaneous red line crises to really focus on issues like this as much as we'd like to. But it's really part of the DNA of this city. And we must not neglect it. And I welcome the work of our artists and the creatives in our community to mourn, to reflect, to heal, just as this project has done. Thank you for great work. It's fun to be here and support a success. I vote aye, the report is accepted. Thank you. Next item is also a time certain item. Item 122, please.
Amend additional requirements for sale, use, and possession of fireworks and pyrotechnics code to clarify unlawful fireworks, aerial luminary devices, and pyrotechnics.
This is a non-emergency ordinance. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. It's not fair that I have to go after that, but here we go. Last summer, during the ongoing global heat pandemic, we witnessed wildfires, heat waves, and the catastrophic effect of climate change that brought death and destruction throughout Oregon. This was a never again moment. As a council, we resolved to be more prepared for our new reality. I'm thankful that Commissioner Rubio has taken action through the Portland Clean Energy Fund to direct cooling resources to vulnerable community members. We must continue to do more. Last year, I supported Fire Chief Sarah Boone's effort to include the use of fireworks in our burn ban. I made it clear I was ready to take action to ban the sale of fireworks, but lacked the authority to do so. I am thankful that Mayor Wheeler did use his authority to do so temporarily last year. Following the wildfires and heat waves last summer, I heard our community's request for strong and decisive action. I made a commitment to bring this ordinance to council to seek a long-term ban on the sale and use of fireworks. I make data-based policy decisions. So before I turn it over to Chief Boone, I want to make note of what the data says about last summer's temporary firework ban. During the firework season 2 years ago in 2020, with no fire ban in place, Portland Fire and Rescue recorded 44 fireworks-related fires. On the 4th of July that year alone, there were 18 fireworks-related fires in Portland. Then last summer, following the temporary firework ban, there were only 15 fireworks-related fires across the entire season and only 3 fireworks-related fires last 4th of July. We must adapt for the safety of our community, and I take the threat fireworks pose to our communities very seriously. What we will do if this is passed is continue to closely monitor the results. If next summer the data shows outcomes we are not satisfied with, we can go back to the drawing board. But we cannot do nothing after what happened last summer. Now I will turn it over to Portland Fire and Rescue Chief Sarah Boone. Chief Boone, take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, and good morning, Mayor Wheeler and City Council. My name is Sarah Boone, Fire Chief of Portland Fire and Rescue, and our mission is to protect life, property, and the environment. And I am going to go off script because you cannot follow and act like community healing through art. And so I'm going to ground the purpose of the power of leverage and the position you have to create a safer environment in which the youth can thrive. And the ecosystem is not just with each other, it is also with the land. So this morning, this is about an ordinance that bans the use and sale of personal consumer fireworks in the city of Portland. For the past 7 years, Portland Fire and Rescue has been working on a program to reduce the use of illegal fireworks. This program was first implemented in 2006 as an enforcement-only program with citations being issued to people storing, selling, and using illegal fireworks. In 2016, the city of Portland passed an ordinance making aerial luminary devices illegal, all in the effort to create a safer city, protecting life, property, and the environment. 1 year later, on September 2, 2017, a single firework started the largest wildfire in Multnomah County, scorching over 48,000 acres of pristine forest land in the Columbia River Gorge. At peak suppression efforts, you had over 1,000 personnel on the front lines, countless community members displaced. Embers carried by the wind as well as the smoke shut down the rail lines and halted train traffic for 3 days, closed down navigable waterways, the Columbia River for no shipping for 2 days, and closed down a major interstate, I-84 westbound 11 days, and I-84 eastbound for 19 days. Any significant fire we have today in the wildland-urban interface, with Portland being the center and the hub, would decimate a region. I have been on fires where we've shut down the interstate bridge for days because of a structure fire. I can only imagine shutting down when it comes to days and weeks of a wildfire. And as we see today with supply chain shortages, most of our goods and services are transported by rail, by shipping, and by trucks on our highways and freeways. It would be devastating if the conditions were right. It would be beyond our control and resources. In 2020, over 1 million acres were affected by wildfires in the state of Oregon. Again, the largest in recorded history. The following year in 2021, the Bootleg Fire, at one point the largest fire in the country. Ongoing high temperatures, limited rainfall, and dry conditions have created the worst drought conditions in over 127 years. Climate change is extending the wildland fire season and making conditions for destructive fires more likely to occur. It is time to reset the landscape in which we all live, change personal behaviors, and take bold steps to protect each other, our communities, and the natural environments that are part of a healthy city. Now, I understand some businesses and community groups won't be happy with this ordinance. I appreciate and respect their opinions. People are still welcome to celebrate Independence Day by attending firework displays that are properly permitted. At this time, I will turn it over to Fire Marshal Carrie Schimmel, who will present more data regarding the hazards of fireworks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Boone. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Wheeler. My name is Carrie Schimmel. I'm the Fire Marshal for Portland Fire and Rescue. And I am going to just provide some supporting data for what both the Commissioner and Chief Boone just spoke about. So I want to circle back to Eagle Creek Fire that was started on September 2nd, 2017. The cause of fire was noted as a firework, but more specifically, it was a smoke bomb. This smoke bomb started a fire that burned 48,861 acres. And to put that in perspective, Forest Park is 5,200 acres. Smoke bombs are currently legal in Portland in the state of Oregon. The types of fireworks that produce the most injuries are mortars, currently illegal in Oregon, fountains that are legal in Oregon, and sparklers, legal in Oregon. These three types accounted for over two-thirds of the injuries. Sparklers can burn at 2,000 degrees to create those bright lights and sparks. This is hot enough to ignite flammable materials such as dry vegetation and cause burns. In 2016, the city of Portland passed an ordinance making aerial luminary devices legal, meaning ground fireworks, including sparklers, are currently legal. Even with this ordinance and outreach effort, the data shows from 2016 to 2020, we saw an increase in fire calls related to fireworks by 57%. Last year, the city of Portland introduced a temporary fireworks ban for the use and sale of fireworks. Even on a temporary basis, the results were dramatic. We saw a reduction by 66% in fire calls related to fireworks. This is the lowest number of fire calls related to fireworks that we have seen in the last 20 years. This proposed ordinance is also in line with Ben's firework ban ordinance that was passed last October of 2021. The benefit of this ordinance is less risk of fire in an increasingly dry environment. Allowing permitted professional displays will allow the community to continue the traditions associated with fireworks. With summers getting hotter and drier and a remarkable decrease in the number of fire calls when a ban was instituted last summer, a ban makes sense. I want to also add that we do a lot of outreach and education, and because this was the timeline was moved up, we've had a lot of communication and face-to-face with applicants submitting applications for permits for the sales of fireworks. And so regardless if the ordinance is passed or not, our efforts of outreach and education will continue. And thank you again for this time this morning.
Thank you. Does that complete the presentation? Excellent. Thank you. Yes, our colleagues, go ahead.
I was saying, yes, Mayor, that completes the formal presentation.
Great. Thank you. Colleagues, any questions at this point? And Keelan, do we have anybody signed up for this item?
Yes, we have two people signed up.
All right, why don't we go ahead and hear from them. 3 minutes each, please, name for the record.
First up, we have Jason Trout.
Welcome, Jason. Jason, you're muted still.
Okay, sorry, there guys. You. Good morning, hey. Mayor and Commissioners. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
My name is Jason Trout. I'm the regional manager for TNT Fireworks in Oregon. I'm representing over 40 community stores that sell ground-based sparklers during the 4th of July. I also represent over 40 nonprofits that partner with TNT Fireworks for fundraisers every summer, many of whom wanted to speak today, but because the only opportunity they've had for public testimony is during work hours, they were only able to send letters. TNT Fireworks also uses tent vendors, truck rental, and storage container companies located within the city of Portland. A ban of sparklers would not only affect all of our immediate partners, but every family within Portland that wants to celebrate the birth of our country and the freedoms that our country allows safely. Our city needs a reason to celebrate something that everyone can agree on, and that is the freedoms that we have and our country has fought for. I'm sure everyone remembers June 28th through the 30th last year. The heat was record-breaking at 116 degrees. But do you remember what the temperature was on July the 1st? The high temperature on July the 1st was 79 degrees. July the 2nd, it was 84 degrees. July the 3rd and 4th, it was 86 degrees, which is actually a little above normal for that time of year. But if we hadn't had three extremely hot days, would the city have even had a reason to ban the sale of sparklers? Probably not. Please do not put another unenforceable law on the Portland Police Bureau based on 3 days that were obviously unprecedented. The city is already able to ban sparklers in an emergency situation, which is what the 3 days in 2021 warranted. Don't ban something forever based on 3 days in history. The city of Portland cannot handle more knee-jerk reactions without the thought of the permanent effect or input from its citizens. Ultimately, TNT Fireworks is trying to be a good partner with the city. Ms. Hardesty's office, when asked, stated that the ban this summer was a trial run and that everyone was under the impression that it was a trial run. Well, I can promise you, the industry that will be affected the most was not notified of a trial run. TNT Fireworks has ordered product, signed contracts with vendors, signed leases with local businesses based on being able to sell sparklers in tents, stores, and stands. Nonprofit organizations were not notified and have made budgets based on the funds that they are expecting, totaling hundreds of thousands of dollars. Vendors have ordered tents and supplies based on commitments from TNT and the industry, and they certainly were not notified. No one has been included in the decision to ban sparklers except a small group within Portland City Hall. TNT respectfully requests the city create a task force made up of all stakeholders who will be affected by a ban. Please don't allow this to be another issue decided without any input from the public and rammed down the throats of citizens of Portland. Please keep the 4th of July and patriotic for everyone to celebrate. As the largest company that gets permits from the city, I haven't had one face-to-face meeting with anyone in regards to processing our permits, nor have our nonprofit organizations. So I'm open to meeting with anyone. I'm opening to question any questions that the council has. We agree with the statement of impact, as well as with the fire marshal and the fire chief, that illegal fireworks are the biggest problem in the city of Portland. And they will continue to be because bans don't work. Thank you guys for your time today. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, Jason. Could I ask you a question? Thank you for being here today and for a powerful statement. Appreciate it. So we have heard from our fire chief and our fire marshal that even the legal fireworks, things as innocuous as smoke bombs, can cause substantial damage. And I believe the statistic they gave was that the wildfire that was in the Columbia River Gorge several years ago damaged 48,000 acres. And they gave other examples where legal fireworks had caused substantial damage, and that the ban last year led to a substantial reduction in fires related to legal fireworks. I agree with you that illegal fireworks will still be problematic. In fact, Commissioner Hardesty and I did not spend our last 4th of July celebrating the independence of the United States. We spent it in front of a burned out apartment building where two people had died as a result of a firework being put in a garbage dumpster next to the building. And so, and that was with the ban, by the way, in place. So, you know, I hear you on that point, but how do you respond to the larger point made by our fire chief and our fire marshal that there is clearly being damage caused and lives lost as a result of these other currently legal fireworks?
You know,
what's the case for them?
In regards to, you know, the Eagle Creek fire, and, you know, fire marshal and the fire chief are correct, that was caused by a smoke bomb. It was caused by a smoke bomb that was purchased in Washington and used on land where fireworks were already banned. And the fire that we had this past summer, tragically, you know, was during a ban already. The people from the city of Portland that want to celebrate and use fireworks responsibly. The fireworks that we have and sell in the state of Oregon, specifically in the city of Portland, are safe and they're not causing fires. They're not causing fires within the city of Portland and they're not causing injuries within the city of Portland. I can only really go off of the statistics that the state fire marshal's office provides because those are the only statistics that are published. You know, obviously the fire chief and the fire marshal have other statistics, you know, that aren't privy to the industry or to the nonprofit groups that run these locations. But up until this point, you know, the fireworks within the city of Portland have been pretty mundane and we haven't caused any accidents.
Thank you for responding to my questions. I appreciate it.
I'm very happy to respond to anyone that has any questions now or later on. I'm very open. We want to work with the city of Portland. We want to be able to provide alternatives so that our nonprofits can still make money and that our consumers can still celebrate the 4th of July like we have for hundreds of years.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Keelan, we have another individual. Is that correct?
Yes. Next Thank up, you. We have Brent Pavlicek.
Good morning, Brent.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Brent Pavlicek. I'm the General Manager of Western Fireworks. We're an Oregon State licensed wholesaler, distributor, importer of fireworks, and we distribute our products in the City of Portland's jurisdiction. Obviously, we are a part of this industry and the commerce within Portland. We are opposed to this proposed ordinance simply because we feel, and based on Mr. Trout's statements, we feel that we would like the opportunity to continue to work and to work together to find a solution and to really begin to assist in the promotion of fireworks in the sense of the safety message. Both of those instances cited by the fire and police chief, as well as Mr. Trout's addressing, you know, those are instances where those fireworks, in the instance of the Eagle Creek, was a legal firework, number one, within Oregon's legal fireworks laws. And then number two, the apartment complex situation this last year, where fireworks that weren't properly extinguished resulted in that tragic accident. And it is our job as an industry to promote safety, number one, and educate the consumers of our product. And that's what we would like the opportunity to do. We obviously partake in the commerce, small businesses and community-based organizations and nonprofit groups in Portland, as Mr. Trout said that their company does. Our plea is that you would engage stakeholders and allow us to work together and educate the community and try and find a balanced proposal. This ban or ordinance, you know, I'll use the term death sentence, it eliminates commerce within Portland that is, you know, affecting full-time, part-time, seasonal employees. It provides work and commerce in Portland. Last year was addressed by Mr. Trout, and I know Mayor Wheeler took the actions that were necessary due to the extreme conditions, which were actually like 100-degree days prior to, say, June 29th, and it allowed for measures to be taken by the mayor to eliminate those fireworks sales or put a ban on them for sales and usage. And the other part I would address with notion to the statistics is that last summer was an anomaly. So not only did cities like Portland put in a temporary ban, so did other communities within Oregon, number one, and number two, so did neighboring states. So there was an extreme awareness due, or I should say, as a part of the fire danger and put into place. So, you know, with that being said, we would really like to work together to find a solution rather than a ban. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brent. Commissioner Hardesty, I think, has a comment or a question. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mayor. Brent, I just wanted to ask you what your opinion is on climate disaster. You said this was an anomaly last summer. I disagree with you. I think our summers are getting hotter. We certainly know that we're in a drought statewide. So what do you think about the climate disaster that's headed our way?
I agree with you in the sense that, yes, we have had a geographical change and it's probably going to continue to come forward based on what we see as our scientists and our weather forecasts present themselves. I guess when I refer to the situation last year, we'd never seen those conditions, number one. Number two, that's why the measures were taken. For example, I'll use Mayor Wheeler's measures that were taken last year. And I understand that. And there are definitely times, if not specific places, where fireworks should not be used. But I do think that we as an industry can work to promote and educate the users of our products.
Can you tell me what percentage of your budget you currently use to promote and educate people on a safe use of your product?
I would say 20%.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you answering my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, thoughts, discussions on this? Keelan, that was the total of the testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor.
All right. Very good. This is a first. Oh, Commissioner Ryan, you snuck in under the fence there.
Good morning. No, I really appreciate the testimony. And I also appreciate Chief Boone and Commissioner Hardesty bringing this to the dais. My question is, when I listened to the testimony, I was struck by, I couldn't tell. So what kind of inclusion and engagement have we done with the people who spoke today and how it impacts the many nonprofits that obviously rely on this for their budgets? I'm curious about how they've been brought along in this process. I couldn't tell from today's presentation where I got mixed messages.
I believe the fire marshal, Carrie Schimmel is still on the line, but let me say that 15 firework fires, a 66% decrease in calls to 911, in my mind, is a sufficient enough reason, knowing what we know about climate mitigation. But I will let the fire marshal, who's been meeting with stakeholders for quite some time, but we moved this vote up because we did not want people to be buying permits that would then be invalidated by this action of the council. So Carrie, would you like to respond, please?
Yes, so, and just to echo that, so we did move this process up because it was around mid-January, we started receiving the permits to, the applications to sell the fireworks. So at that time, our outreach really has just been the communication and being transparent with those applicants. I've had conversations with Jason last summer and recently this year. So it's really just trying to have that open communication, and they've been briefed along what we're proposing along the way. So again, our outreach efforts and education is very important to us. So we will, we always do it, but if this ordinance is passed, we will really get moving on spending, of course, it's going to cost a little money, but our efforts will be ramped up based on the outcome. But as of right now, it's just been communication with the industry and the applicants.
So far, we just haven't had the outreach engagement. We're beginning it now.
We've had some, but not as much as we'd like, just because we're moving the whole process up. So yes, correct.
Okay, and what have we learned from Bend, Oregon, who passed this last September, was it?
I believe it was October. So, they actually had a reduction in calls last summer by 80%. We haven't had a lot of, I reached out yesterday, late afternoon, on some of their data points that they had to back their ordinance, but really, I think circling back to what the commissioner said, it's something you put in place, and then we reevaluate as data comes in or what it's going to look like this coming summer.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Ryan, I also want to add that Vancouver also has a sales ban. The cities, of course, that have forestry land are really concerned about the climate change and the drought conditions, and just are being really proactive ahead of the season. So that's why we're bringing this ordinance forward now. And as Carrie said, we have been in communication with the industry. They just don't like the answer that they're receiving from us.
Thank you. Anything else, colleagues? Seeing none, this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thanks for everybody who presented and everybody who testified. Next up, we'll move to the regular agenda. If I can find my page here, here it is. Item number 133, please.
Amend the Community Budget Advisory Board to allow participation of those who live, work, worship, play, or go to school in Portland.
Colleagues, I would like to continue this item to March 2nd, 2022. Next item, please, 134.
Appoint James Parker to the Community Budget Advisory Board for a term to expire December 31st, 2024.
Colleagues, I'd like to refer this item back to my office without objection. Item 135, please.
Create the Arrol Heights Local Improvement District to construct street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements.
Item number 135 is a second reading. Any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing this project forward. This project is overdue and important. I vote aye.
Ryan.
I vote aye.
Hardesty. Aye. Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 136, also a second reading.
Authorize a full payment deferral loans program to property owners in the Arrol Heights Local Improvement District until the participating property is sold and or title transferred to another owner or entity.
This is a second reading. We've already heard a presentation, had opportunity for public testimony. Any further business on this item? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Item 137, also a second reading.
Authorize Bureau of Environmental Services Director to offer market rate and safety net loans to property owners for sanitary sewer dump installation when required by city code and for repairs on private property to continue sanitary sewer service.
Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Commissioner Maps and BES staff for bringing this forward today. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, I appreciate this being brought to the dais. I am full support of it on a very technical level. I asked questions last week related to how this can connect dots with providing more affordable housing. And I want to continue to follow up on that, because I fear that this won't have any outcomes related to that. And we're not in a time and a place where we can't make any of these code technical adjustments without looking at the bigger picture. So I look forward to working with Commissioner Mapp's office and the Housing Bureau to see how those dots can connect. But on this technical matter, I will vote aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Let me start off out by pledging to engage in that conversation with Commissioner Ryan about how we can connect this program to bringing more affordable housing to Portland. But in the meantime, I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 138, second reading.
Authorize bid solicitation and contracting with the lowest responsive and responsible bidder for construction of the North Janssen West of North Pavilion Avenue Water Main Improvement Project for an estimated cost of $1,326,698.
Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
I want to thank my colleagues for voting aye on this item. I also want to reassure folks who testified last week that the Water Bureau will continue to work with interested parties around sorting out access to water meters. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Back to the consent agenda. Item 124 was pulled.
Authorize a settlement agreement between the City and Oregon AFSCME Council 75 Local 189 relating to the terms and conditions of specific represented employees' merit increase and cost of living adjustments.
Commissioner Mapps.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I pulled this item for the purpose of adding an emergency clause to it. Making this an emergency measure will allow staff to process the COLA back pay and merit increases right away instead of waiting 30 days. So in order to get there, I'm going to propose an amendment. And here is the amendment I propose. I believe it should read something like this. Section 2, the council declares that an emergency exists because a delay would unnecessarily delay the orderly implementation of the provisions of this agreement. Therefore, this ordinance shall be in full force and effect from and after its passage by the council. So that's the wording of the amendment, and I'm looking for a second.
I will second it.
Thank
you. So Commissioner Mapps has an amendment on the table. Any further discussion regarding Commissioner Mapp's amendment? Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Very good. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Mapps.
Aye.
Mueller.
Aye. The amendment's adopted to the main motion is amended. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Mapps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended. Keelan, that completes our business for this morning.
It does, Mayor.
Very well. I'll see you all at 2 p.m. We are adjourned. Thank you.